Welcome to Conversations with David Lewis. Today, one story from September 11th. Continuing now my interview with Stephen Merkel, the Cantor Fitzgerald General Counsel who survived September 11th. Unfortunately, 658 of his fellow employees did not. Cantor Fitzgerald occupied the five floors directly beneath Windows on the World. Merkel, through an extraordinary twist of fate, was late for work that morning. 30 seconds faster, and Merkel probably would have died. In the first segment of the interview, he told the story of his survival, his twist of fate, and escaping from the scene. Now, more from Stephen Merkel.
The colleague that I was with had been unable to get a hold of his wife, and he himself had to come down. He had been at work and had to come down to the lobby to help let someone in who didn't have their security ID.
Oh, boy.
His wife had no idea that he was fine, and he was somewhat concerned about getting a hold of her, but there was nothing we could do. Along the way, we heard about the Pentagon having been hit. We learned that two World Trade, what people now call the South Tower, had collapsed. Again, I was just, I think I was focusing on what I need to do. I was thinking about, well, if the company's going to really have a trouble here, I don't know, what's going to be happening? What do I need to take care of? Again, not really thinking that thinking the business was probably in trouble, if the premises were going to be unusable, but I didn't even think that our tower was going to come down. I don't know why. I guess I realized ours was hit first and the second one went down. I just, for whatever reason, had not focused and did not think about that both the building and the people were doomed at that point. And we sort of kept going uptown, and at some point the cell phone worked, and I gave it to my colleague, who was able to then get a hold of his wife, who it had been over an hour at this point. They were able to speak for the first time, and she realized that he was okay, because she had obviously thought otherwise, and it was extremely emotional for him. When I think about it, I can get emotional, and I'm sure if I saw it in some movie, I would tear up, but I remember at the time observing it again, relatively sort of somewhat coolly, and understanding that it was extremely emotional for him, and I was glad that he had the phone, but Ken and I felt like we just got to keep walking. We got a lot to do. I don't even think, I processed sort of all that had gone on for me that morning and everything that had taken place, each twist and turn. Although I thought about it many, many times since, about each step along the way, and why I walked and why I stopped and why I went back and why I gave directions, and each movement that, every minute, maybe even again every half minute, making a big difference.
Because you would have been on that elevator.
I would have been, anything along the way, and any one of the things that I've gone through been different, I would have been gone. It wouldn't have taken much at all to be an elevator that was stuck. It wouldn't take much at all to have switched and gone up to our floor. It only took 2 minutes, sort of from the bottom to the top, including changing elevators. And so those periods of time, each of them were, they were critical, but who knew? But I don't think I felt that morning any of that. I was just in a different head. However much the thoughts were about taking care of what I needed to take care of and trying to still determine what we were going to do. And so we continued uptown. Eventually I made it to my home in Greenwich Village and came in and saw my wife and saw my kids. The phone was ringing off the hook. I mean, everyone was calling. I mean, they called all morning, all afternoon, all night long. And we had calls of all types, people who I had years, people who were out of town. Strangely, my brother was unable to get through, and so he never got my email. So my brother actually didn't learn for, I'd say, over 2 hours, maybe more than that, that I was fine. I think he was pretty convinced that I was not. There were a lot of phone calls that came in from families of people that I worked with, and I really had almost no information to tell them, though I did receive one call when someone, and I had not been watching television, when a wife of one colleague said, well, give me a sense of how long you think it would take to go down the stairs, and I gave them what I thought, and they explained that what time that second tower had collapsed, and I said, I thought only the first tower had collapsed, and he said, no, you haven't been watching television. I go, no. He goes, no, the second tower is down. And still I thought, well, maybe some folks did get out. I go, my cell phone didn't work at all downtown, and maybe we just haven't heard from people. It must be a complete mess. And sort of the way in which it dawned on me that they were all gone was an interesting process. Although there were some things I thought of extremely clearly on, this did not process quickly, and people were calling, sort of desperately trying to find out where the people were and what could be done, and it was awful. It was there was really nothing more awful than that. That process of that very first day was really trying to share information and telling people. I didn't tell people not to lose hope. We really didn't know, and there were those who already sort of knew it was hopeless. But maybe at 99%, maybe not 100%, we were all completely blind and deaf, really, as to what was going on. There was no news.
Did anyone make it out?
No. No, everyone from 10 from our floors, every single person was trapped. It was 100% loss. And I think it's important to realize that in the midst of this was a fair amount of work being done, and we started making work calls. I mean, sitting in my apartment with my little kids running around, we began to call people. You know, I ended up speaking sort of over the next few hours. We were having conference calls with all sorts of people. I called the SEC in Washington and explained that I would be a point of contact, but it would have to be through my cell phone. We spoke to the banks at JPMorgan Chase. We spoke to the Clearing Corps. Who themselves were having to relocate. We were sort of everyone was giving out numbers of what we were going to need to do, and I had to explain that I was around, my boss was around, folks in London were around, and I didn't know who else was, but we're obviously going to need to stay in touch about dealing with business, dealing with trade. We were a big brokerage firm clearing billions of dollars a day of transactions and having to figure out how business was going to go forward, how we were going to sort of deal with what we had on the books and how we were going to deal with anything else. It was important. I'd be having those calls. At the same time, I'd get another phone call, through call waiting, whether it's my cell phone or work phone, from some family member who wanted to talk. And you'd have this sort of weave of work calls, contingency calls, people helping, a family member call, all happening at the same time in my apartment.
And throughout all this, you're trying to get this huge business, moving again. You're dealing with family grief. Was the fact that your own twist of fate, the own decisions that you made to walk to work, to go into the health club, to double back to the health club, to advise people where to find the restaurant, to walk them there, did it occur to you at that point, my God, I could be dead?
Not yet. But I didn't really think about the timing issues until later. Of course, everyone had some reason that they weren't there, and eventually it sort of hit us. But it was not, it came later, sort of that stunned epiphany of it shouldn't have been that way. It should have been otherwise. It didn't make any sense that all of these things would come together to prevent me from going there. There were just too many things that delayed me. How could you possibly have that kind of sequence? That was a later thought that dominated my thinking. It was not in my brain much at that time. I was just doing other things. I took a break and got a bunch of water for the family and took out a lot of cash. It seemed important to me to do that. And we decided to sort of head uptown. And as we were walking to try to find a taxi, I passed an ad for, I don't know what it was called, Hot Jobs or some sort of advertisement, which was on maybe bus stops. And it had an image of the Twin Towers. And it had, as their slogan, a playground for the fearless. And I just looked at it, and I remember taking a mental snapshot of it and just, I'm seeing all these people walking by with dust everywhere and realizing what had occurred. And it just struck me as, one of those strange, you couldn't make it up, right? Really?
Right.
You couldn't, how could you make this up?
Right.
As I say, it was all sort of woven together, speaking to people, working and dealing with it all at the, sort of all coming together at the same time.
In the next segment of my interview with Stephen Merkel, he'll talk about what it's like 5 years later, what it's like today, facing the anniversary of September 11th.